Let me encourage you to keep your songbook open to that song, because it so well fits into the lesson that we're going to try and do this morning. That first stanza is something I think we all struggle with. I do. Why should it be the way it is? Tempted and tried. Things don't go the way I want all the time. We're often made to wonder why it should be thus all the day long, while there are others living about us never molested. People in the world, people who don't even make an attempt to live in a way that God says we should live, sometimes it seems like they got all the money. They got all the power. They got all the recognition. They got all the good things. It's easy to think that, you know, maybe God's not in control. Maybe we're on the wrong side of all this. Maybe the kind of things that are perpetuated in the media and that we see on the movie screen are the way we should live. Farther along, well, I'm worried about right now. Farther along. I don't want to look farther along. And then death becomes a part of the picture. Second stanza. The one thing we do have, the people we love, the people we care about, they're taken from us. I can tell you from personal experience, nothing is, a lot of the songs say, nothing's as painful as loneliness. Why should it be? That song is very much what I want to talk about this morning. And it's a continuation of last week's lesson. Last week, we talked about Satan. I think this problem of farther along and the problem of why people in the world do so well and we don't always do so well is because we don't really understand what reality is about, what Satan is about. And people that have been members of the church forever have some very unfortunate views, I think, about this sometimes. Last week, we saw that Satan was a timeless, real person, the opposer, the spirit that is negative. We saw the Bible's warnings about Satan's nature and how he works, that sometimes he works by brute force. But more often we see, and we studied Matthew 13 last week, the parable of the wheat and the tares. But Satan's a lot smarter than that, a lot shrewder than that. People can resist force, but it's harder to resist the devious things that happen from people sometimes we're supposed to trust. And we looked at the teachings that the Bible gives us that indicates there's a purpose for the church, that there are rulers and powers, to use the language of Ephesians 3, beginning with verse 8, rulers and powers in heavenly places. And again in Ephesians 6, beginning with verse 11, we're told how to resist these evil forces. And in the book of Job, we see the conflict and our role in the conflict. We see that Satan works with negatives. He works in secret. He imitates God. He works even in the church sometimes. I want to focus your attention this morning on the contrast between that and Jesus Christ. And I want you to think about this on a logical basis. My first point is that we need to understand that Jesus was God, and Satan plays God. And boy, there's a huge difference in those two things. John 1, beginning with verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The word that is used there is logos in the original language, and it indicates the power of the Word. It refers to Christ. It goes on in verse 14, makes that abundantly clear. The Word became flesh. The Logos became flesh and lived for a while among us. God came to earth. God presented man with the wisdom of how to live. God came to us and gave us the capacity to have real meaning in life. One of the interesting things, and since I am trained in science, I probably see this more than the average person, is that we have all these passages that talk about Jesus being involved in the creation. We look, for example, at John 1 and verse 3. Through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that has been made. Jesus was involved in the creation. You see, one of the things that's interesting about the creation is the creation takes power. We talk about that. When scientists talk about the Big Bang, they're talking about an energy condition that is virtually beyond our ability to comprehend. And that's, of course, the way the Bible portrays God. But we also in science have learned the intricacies of the creation, the beauty in the creation. You've heard the saying, no two snowflakes look alike. Okay, I don't know that I care a whole lot. I wish they'd get some of that off my driveway. But the point is, the idea behind that is that there's some force involved here. And when you study the chemistry of water, what you see is an amazing picture of why snowflakes form as they do. There's beauty involved. There's fine-tuning involved. As a physicist, I can show you 47 things that are necessary to make a water molecule. 47 different independent choices that if any one of them were modified by even 0.1%, water could not exist. And therefore, neither could we. Colossians 1, beginning with verse 15, says, Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by Him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by Him and for Him. He is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. Jesus gives the capacity for creation to show beauty, to show wisdom, to show purpose, to show direction. Have you gone outside the last couple of days and looked at the moon? Have you spent some time looking at the beauty of this? I know a bunch of you went up and looked at Lake Michigan. Want to see ice as far as you could look. But have you looked at the beauty of the creation? Have you looked at the things that are involved in the creation that allow us to see and to understand the wisdom of God? Did you notice the lilacs are budding? The lilacs are budding. You can't see the daffodils yet. They're still buried under 6 feet of snow, but you can see the lilacs. You ever think about why that's there, why that beauty is there? You ever reasoned why it is that all this happens? People saying, well, it's been a terrible winter. Let me tell you something. The creatures that live under the ground and close to the ground have loved this winter because they're insulated. What a beautiful picture we see when we look in reality at nature. Jesus was God. Jesus portrays not only the power and the strength of God, but the wisdom that is built into every fabric of our being. One of the things that I love is to read something new, something that has just been discovered about the nature of the world in which we live. I've been delving for the last 10 years deeply into quantum mechanics. And it's the weirdness of it, the strangeness of it, the beauty of it, the wisdom of it, the tooling of it is just phenomenal. And it's all a reflection that Jesus was God. But Satan plays God. You know, in Matthew, the 4th chapter, we see the temptation of Christ. I want you to notice what Satan does here. Because Satan plays God. We read in Matthew 4, beginning with verse 1, Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. You see, Satan has power over food, and he uses food as a tool to manipulate mankind. I had my yearly checkup on Friday, and the doctor and I went around and around, as we always do on various things. And now we were talking primarily about food, and I get an earful of that every day from Cindy. This time he was agreeing with her. But I think what was interesting was he said to me, and this doctor has some spiritual values, he says, you know, not every good food was created by God. There's some bad foods that were created by Satan. And whereupon he jumps off into trans fats and sugar and all that stuff. Well, it's important to understand that Satan has control over food, and he has used food as a tool, or the lack of it, as a tool to control mankind. That's playing God. We have people that want to play God. This situation in California right now, in the San Joaquin Valley, is fascinating. If you're not following it in the news, the farmers in the San Joaquin Valley that produce 75% of our produce are not planting anything right now. You think prices are high? They're suggesting a head of lettuce will go to $5 by the end of the summer. Now, what's that all about? Well, you see, what's involved here is that there's people playing God with the water. And they shut off the water, and the farmers say, we can't grow crops without water. So we're not going to put anything in the ground. It's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. You see, evil controls things like that. And we need to understand that these food shortages and these manipulations are Satan being active in our world. That negative spirit, that destructive spirit is within us. And of course, Jesus responds to him and says, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but on every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. There are some things that are more important than eating. That may sound hard to believe. You know, you haven't had any food for a while and you're hungry. But it's important to understand the nature of that and talk to Godwick if you want to talk about food and what's happening in his country and the country around him. You move on in that verse. It tells us the next thing happens is the devil took him to a holy city and stood in the highest point of the temple and said, if you are the Son of God, do a trick. Throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against the stone. If you're the Son of God, be a superstar. You know, it's important to understand that being a superstar has very little to do with the reality of life. Our culture is obsessed with superstars. As in the doctor's office, there's a magazine called People's Magazine. And the particular issue I grabbed, I just took it off the thing, didn't look at it until I sat down, got looking at it. The whole thing was dealing with what women wore to some awards thing. Superstar. Our culture is embedded in that. And Satan uses that, especially to control the minds of our young, to control our morals. Anytime a superstar wants to get her name on the front page, all she has to do is announce she's coming out. And that happens. It's happened twice this week. It's even had implications for the Olympics. But Jesus writes and says, you don't put God to the test. It's important to understand that superstar status and the obsession of our culture with people that are beautiful and with people who do unusual things, whether it's Miley Cyrus or whether it's some political figure, Jesus says, you know, don't put God to the test. That's not where it's at. Satan plays God. And what does he do next? Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and all their splendor. And all this I will give you. I want you to notice what Satan has control over here. He has control over the superstar who makes it to number one. He has control over food. What he says here is, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. All this I will give you if you'll just bow down and worship me. See, Satan has control over wealth, over money. Who has money and who doesn't have money is at the control of Satan. He offered all that to Christ. And he offers all that to you, all that to me. You notice they just arrested the number one drug lord in Mexico yesterday? Do you see what that guy's annual income is? They're estimating he was making $750 million a year. A year. Who's he working for? He's working for Satan. Satan has control. And that brings me to an important point. You see, Jesus functions by blessings. And Satan functions by curses. You think about it for a minute. What did Jesus do for the people of his day? When people came to Christ, why did they come to Christ? Well, some of them came because they wanted to hear his message. Some of them came because they wanted to be healed. Some of them came because they wanted food. Remember the feeding of the 5,000 in the desert? You go through the life of Christ and you're going to see that Jesus brought blessings to people. And I would submit to you that happens today. The good things that happen today happen because people have an identity with Jesus Christ. Who's running the food kitchens? Who's running the human shelters, the homeless shelters? Who's doing the benevolent work? It's not those that are aligned with Satan. It's been kind of interesting, and I'm not sure all the reasons for this, but we have a casino here, over here, that was built by the Indians. One of the things they said at the start is, we're going to use this money to help our own people. Okay, ask Patty, how many of the people that are coming to our food pantry, getting food from us, are people that are associated with the Indians? And we've talked to some, I've talked to a couple of them, some of you have talked to some of them. And they say, well, we can't get help from them. See, Satan is control. He is the one that functions that way. He is the one that works. Jesus brings blessings. What does Satan do? Remember the book of Job? What does Satan do? See, in the book of Job, we have a picture of how Satan works. That he brings curses. He brings pain. He brings suffering. The bad things that happened to you came to you because of Satan. Read the book of Job. Look at where the bad things that happened in his life came from. And so, what does Satan bring? He brings pain. He brings abuse. It started with Adam and Eve. It happens with people today. Where did my son get his blindness, his mental retardation, his cerebral palsy, all the things that are wrong with him? David Harris Savage, where did that come from? I've had a rough week with my brother Bill. My brother Bill has Parkinson's. Now we found out he has a form of dementia which is related to Parkinson's, and both of them are related to exposure to Agent Orange. Where did Agent Orange came from? It came from Satan's activity in the world affairs of man. It's important to understand that when you look at Jesus, you see blessings. When you look at Satan, you see curses. Satan works by pain. He works by bringing bad things into people's life. And even in things that are wonderful for us in some ways can be used by Satan in a negative way. Read the Song of Solomon and see God's view of sex. And we don't read the Song of Solomon very much. I'm not sure why that is. There's some beautiful passages there. Look in Genesis 2 and verse 24 at what God says about what the relation of man and woman should be. But what do we see Satan bringing to us? Pornography, prostitution, abuse, promiscuity, STDs. Look at the difference. Jesus was God. Satan plays God. And in playing God, he brings all of these negatives to us. We need to understand the relationship between Jesus and Satan. Let me also suggest to you that Jesus brings spiritual clarity and Satan brings spiritual blindness. Let me say that again. Jesus brings spiritual clarity and Satan brings spiritual blindness. Jesus calls man to 100% humility. Satan calls man to humiliation. And let me encourage you to think about this for a minute. What did Jesus teach his apostles? What did he teach his disciples? Go to John 13. Read verses 1 through 17. This is where Jesus washes the feet of the disciples. And look what happens when he gets to the end of that. He says, "Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example so that you should do what I have done for you." Are we clear in our understanding that we are to serve others? Do we have that kind of spiritual clarity? Do we realize that to wash somebody's feet was the most humble thing you could do in that day and time? You know, our feet don't smell all that great now. I sometimes kid my podiatrist about that. I said, "Dr. Fauci, you got the dirtiest job on the planet sometimes, don't you?" And he said, "No, the dentists are worse." And I thought that was an interesting observation. In Jesus' time, it was even much worse than that because people didn't have shoes. People walked for miles and miles and miles in dirt. There was sewage. There was garbage all over the place. People walked through that. Every time I make that statement, I think of that scene in The Slumdog Millionaire where the guy falls into the sewer and comes out holding the picture in his hand. That's the kind of thing that was going on in Jesus' time. People would have human feces all the way up to their knees as they were walking from one place to another. And those people were anybody that came into somebody's house. So what did they do about it? The lowliest slave, the person who was the most inferior person around, the person who had done something wrong, was the person who got to wash everybody's feet. All that smell, all that odor. And Jesus sat down and did that. There is nothing that we can do that gives us greater clarity than to understand the importance of relating to others' needs, even when those needs are difficult for us to accept. A good example of that is in Luke 7, beginning with verse 36. There was a woman, the Bible says, she had lived a sinful life. Verse 37. Again, this is Luke 7. And she's washing Jesus' feet. But to get water, she's weeping. She is that immersed in how bad her life has been. And she's wiping his feet with her hair. And she's kissing his feet. Can you imagine doing that? You know, my wife won't kiss me if I haven't washed my hands. You know, can you imagine doing that with somebody's feet? And Jesus responds to her, and he says to her, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." She didn't have a physical disease. The Bible doesn't say anything about her being with leprosy or her having some kind of a problem, but she did have spiritual blindness. But when she had completely humbled herself, it brought her out away from her sin and into complete spiritual clarity. Jesus brings us to 100% humility. You know what? That means 0% arrogance. 0% arrogance. Now, how about Satan? What does Satan do? Well, sort of the other way around. 100% arrogance, 0% humility. But I want you to think about the history of mankind as it's given to us in the Scriptures. When Cain kills Abel, now he doesn't get an immediate physical punishment. They don't hang him or stone him or do something negative to him. But when it is announced that he's going to live with what he has done, his response to that in Genesis 4, beginning with verse 9, is, "My punishment is more than I can bear." More than I can bear. Having been immersed in sin can bring you more than you can bear. Remember the story of David and Bathsheba? One of the interesting things about that story and one of the connections that we can make with that story is what happens when the whole thing is exposed. And it's kind of interesting. In 2 Samuel 12, beginning with verse 7, we see what happens with David and the fact that Satan led him into this sin. I'll just read it to refresh your memory. "Then Nathan said to Satan, 'You are the man. You are the man.'" Can you imagine? David thinks somehow he's gotten away with this thing. And Nathan is saying, "You're the man. And this is what the Lord God of Israel says. I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave your master's house to you and your master's wives to your arms. I gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if all this had been too little, I would have given you even more. Why did you despise the word of the Lord by doing this which is evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with a sword. You took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house. And because you despised me and took the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your own. And this is what the Lord says, out of your own household, I am going to bring calamity upon you. Before your very eyes, I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you. And he will lie with your wives in broad daylight. You did this in secret, but I will do this in broad daylight before all Israel. And what's David's response? Verse 13. David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. You see, Satan's activity in David's life brought him pain of such a level that he can make no response except to say, I have sinned. And later on, as you continue to read, and you might look at Psalms 51, verse 3, David is consumed the rest of his life with the consequences of his sin. My sin is ever before me. You know, that should be so obvious to us. We look at the lives, even in our day and time. When I say Bill Clinton, what do most Americans respond? I saw a survey on this the other day. When that mentions Bill Clinton, they went down through the streets of small American towns. They asked people, what comes into your mind? You know what the most common answer was that was given? Monica Lewinsky. The fact that he was the last president that ever got this country into a situation where we weren't in negative spending. Nobody remembers that. The fact that there was no war fought during his presidency, we don't remember that. And I don't want to get into a debate about Bill Clinton. I'm just saying what people remember about Bill Clinton is what Satan was effective in leading him to. When I say Tiger Woods, what do most people think about? What do they remember about Tiger Woods? Now, some people went, well, one of the greatest golfers that ever lived. But a huge percentage of people interviewed when they were asked about Tiger Woods, their response was his infidelities to his wife and the kind of lifestyle that he lived. I'm saying to you, Satan brings us to humiliation. And young people, let me tell you something. Satan has those controls I talked about when I started this lesson. But ultimately, Satan will bring you to humiliation. Ultimately, he will destroy your life. Jesus brings spiritual clarity. Satan brings spiritual blindness. So Jesus says, the Lord loves the cheerful giver. And Satan says, it's survival of the fittest. Jesus says, know ye not that ye are the temple of God? And Satan says, get high with pot. We'll make it legal. Jesus says, love your wife as yourself. And Satan says, look after number one. Jesus says, there is laid up for you a crown when it's over. And Satan says, when you're gone, you're like Rover. You're dead all over. Jesus says, love your enemy. Turn the other cheek. And Satan says, get them before they get you. Jesus says, love one another. And Satan says, never turn your back. Jesus says, compare, it is more blessed to give. And Satan says, whoever has the most toys wins. Jesus says, you're in the image of God. You have value. And Satan says, you're just a pile of dirt. Satan brings us to spiritual blindness. And it's so important that we understand the contrast here. Whose side do you want to be on? You know, back in the Old Testament, in Joshua 24 and verse 19, the people got to the point we're at today. The world around them had shown them the pluses of rejecting God. Sexual freedom. Violence. And our obsession with violence just appalls me every day. Bible says that, and history tells us, that the people surrounding the Israelites made violence their everyday fare. I saw a thing the other day that said that of children's video games right now, 75% portray violence beyond what is in the normal experience of human beings. And so the question is, whose side are you going to be on? Jesus is God. He brings the positives. Satan is the opposing spirit. We studied his nature last week. You can't straddle the fence. You can't be halfway. Jesus says in Matthew 12 and verse 30, "He who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters." And then this passage, which is misrepresented so many times, "Every sin and blasphemy will be forgiven, but the blasphemy against the Spirit," capital S, "will not be forgiven. Anyone who speaks a word against the Son of Man will be forgiven, but anyone who speaks against the Holy Spirit will not be forgiven, either in this age or the age to come." The unforgivable sin. What is the unforgivable sin? It's when you have become so hard. You have become so selfish. You have become so blind spiritually that knowing what the choice is, you deliberately choose the opposing spirit. You accept as the guiding force in your life Satan and his kingdom. It's unforgivable because you're fighting God. It's unforgivable because your heart has become so hard that you won't let anything God does interfere with your allegiance to Satan. And so Jesus says in Luke 11 and verse 23, "He that is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters." Jesus says over and over, Luke 16, verse 13, Matthew 6, verse 24, "No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot be a slave to both God and money." Joshua, in that passage, says, Joshua 24, verse 15, "But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve." What are you a slave to? What will you serve? My begging to you today is to not serve the opposing spirit. To recognize what Jesus brings to you and the importance of being a Christian and the importance of living as Jesus calls you to live. And it isn't just because we want to fill the building, and it isn't because of any ego trip on my part or the part of anyone else. The question is, what kind of a life do you want to live? Where will that life take you? What is the source of strength in your life? What do you focus on? What ultimately brings you joy? Where will this lead you in the long term? And I've talked today just strictly from looking at the evidence, from looking at practical life, to looking not only at the lives of people in the biblical past, but in the secular lives of the world around us. Choose you this day whom you will serve. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, I beg of you, don't continue to serve Satan. Rejecting Christ means accepting everything else except what Jesus gives you and what he offers to you. Jesus was God. Everything he taught, everything he presented, gave clarity, purpose, direction, meaning to life. Choose that. Don't choose the world around us. And if you've let your life decay to such a point that you need special prayers, everyone here would be more than happy to pray with you and for you that you will have a renewed clarity and a renewed desire to serve God as God calls you to. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you please come as together we stand and sing, we urge you to come.